nice warm bed. You just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me. You got a friend in me.
You go and say it.
Oh, well, good morning and welcome to...
Or good afternoon or good evening.
Wherever you are in the world.
Yes, exactly.
Welcome to the Community Living Show here on the NCRA networks and on the flagship station.
Full hour.
For the full hour show.
Yes.
And on UBC campus at CITR.
101.9 FM.
101.9 FM.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm Kelly, and of course, that's Michael there.
Yeah.
How you been?
Yeah, I've been pretty good, actually.
That's good.
Yeah. I was at a talk a few days ago. One of our friends, Kara McGill.
Yes.
She was speaking to a group of seniors about living with multiple sclerosis.
Multiple sclerosis. Yeah. Now explain about that.
Well, she was telling the story about how she woke up one morning and half her body didn't work, and some of the other things that she's had happened because of multiple sclerosis. She lost her job. She wound up on disability. But some of the really cool things that has happened is she's had the time to become an author.
Right.
Become an inspirational speaker. Mm-hmm. She is a crisis coach.
A crisis coach.
You wind up in an accident or something like that. Life changing. She helps coach people through that stuff now.
All right.
You know, referring back to her own experiences and things like that.
Right.
But the disturbing thing that happened, and it makes you think about how people actually see disorders like MS, arthritis, and fibromyalgia.
Right.
This guy sat in the audience. He's like, "Well, you're doing pretty good for having MS. You're walking around and everything. I thought you're supposed to be in a wheelchair."
Right.
And she addressed it very eloquently. And she said that it's like, "I wake up every morning in pain." It's like, it doesn't really end. And the chronic fatigue because of the pain doesn't really end.
Okay.
So I've actually run into her. She's a wonderful ball of energy. And I've been at events like when we're at the Bill Conference. Bill 2015, she was one of the organizers.
Right.
And I watched her actually collapse midway through the day because she just needed a break.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, blah, done.
All done, yes.
Yeah. You know, and these are the things that people don't see when they make comments like that.
Mm.
It's like, so, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. She's also one of the supporters for the Fibromyalgia Wellspring Walk. And she's also, I think she's going to do an interview for the documentary we're also doing about around that with hidden disabilities. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, you've known, I don't know, it was a couple of days ago, there was some disturbance of SkyTrain?
Yes.
Yes. But
would it half of the SkyTrain was shut down or something like that?
Well,
something
what happened? What happened was one of the cars automatically broke down. All right? Between Broadway and between Main Street and Stadium Station. And what I heard was there was some sort of mechanical problems with the train, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, and everything went down to a halt. So everybody had to do the train shuttle buses from where Broadway SkyTrain station is down towards Waterfront. So here now is a clip from the SkyTrain disruption technical briefing that was held on November 24th that was from the buzzer.
Said earlier, I'm Jennifer Moreland, TransLink spokesperson, and we have Richard Sykes here, the Vice President of Maintenance with SkyTrain. And as you know, we had a SkyTrain disruption yesterday. We were notified of it or made aware of it around 2:30 or so, and it was caused by damage to a power piece of equipment, a power collector, which caused a service or power outage. Which had service out between Commercial Broadway and Waterfront Station. Richard Sykes here is gonna walk us through what the timeline was, so how we discovered the problem and what our response was, and we'll walk through that timeline and then save questions till the end and we can address them from there. So Richard, maybe I'll pass it over to you to talk about how we became aware of the incident and what our immediate response was.
So good afternoon. Firstly, I'd like to apologize to all the passengers for the delay yesterday. At around 2:30, as Jennifer's pointed out, we saw on the power rail system a ground fault. A ground fault tends to be when we've had an electrical disconnection. The offending device is this device here. Okay, this is a power collector shoe in its entirety. It's orientated on its back currently. However, that's the complete item, as it should have been attached to the train. Okay. What we did after finding the initial investigation, generally when we have a problem with a power collector shoe, what happens is we would dispatch someone to check the power rail. They are two shoes, a positive and a negative shoe. They're orientated on the vehicle in that same way, positive on the top, negative underneath. We have expansion joints in the power rail. Generally what happens, and we had this incident of a power rail incident in 2013, where we lost some shoes because of an open gap. That doesn't happen in the cold. But we went out and checked. We were checking on the Sky Bridge, we checked the downtown core, we checked the trains in the area. What we did was we dispatched two teams from Main Street and from Waterfront and had to walk the entire guideway looking for the offending device. We couldn't find what happened. So two teams, as I say, walked towards one another. They looked out for any deficiencies we found in the rail. We then realized that we had some equipment stored at the Venice Pocket. We had that equipment checked to see if there was anything in that area that was causing an offending item. Then we found vehicle 2, vehicle 002. And the orientation I want to take you through right now, where you're standing, Science World was to our left-hand side. We're standing in front of vehicle 2. Here is a parapet wall 5 meters in the air, looking out over the dock. So in a very confined space, and I am going to move, yeah? In a very confined space here, I've got a parapet wall.
They move over to the front of the train.
To work in. The offending collector assembly in its entirety, that one, was located here. So I've got a parapet wall here. And
the other side of the train.
On the inside of the parapet wall, I've got the power rail, which are these two rails here. So parapet wall, power rails fixed to it. The collector assembly is jammed between the wheel, the track brake, and the negative rail. After seeing this, what we thought initially is we could cut it out. So we came in, we cut the collector shoe away from the train, however, still couldn't get it out because of the limited space. We sent for some jacks. The jacks come, because we actually believed that what we could do is with a train, small jacks, was maneuver the train out of the way. Actually, what come into hand. Into effect was the space was too small, we could not get into the confined area, and the jacks we had were not the right ones. Hence, we went and sent for the heavy lifting jacks, and the equipment here is what we had to use. This consists of a hydraulic pump, hydraulic hoses, two hydraulic jacks, and a lifting beam. It takes us about an hour to set this up, okay? Once it's set up, we have to have a safe working area.
Sorry, I'm just going to interrupt. I think, Richard, we want to highlight how heavy the equipment is, too, to be able to bring it up to the guideway and for staff to be able to maneuver it. So feel free to go and give it a lift yourself, both this and this equipment is incredibly heavy also.
Yeah. Just to give that and follow on from that, that collector shoe assembly weighs around 55 pounds. So there was no way we were going to manhandle it out. So once we set the jacks up, I have to set up a safe working zone, and myself and my senior rail engineer were on site coordinating the works. And what happens, you have to have one person on the jack, or sorry, on the hydraulic pump, one person for each jack to ensure that they lift in tandem, and the supervisor to make sure the works are coordinated correctly and the train comes up in one area. I can lift a train for you, and I'm going to, just to show you what that movability was. But not only do we lift it up, I have to move the train in the right-hand direction looking at it. So we have to lift it up and then slide the train up to the right-hand side to be able to remove the offending shoe collector assembly in its entirety. So in the time that it took for us to get the equipment onto site, set up, and, you know, safely remove the equipment, put the train back on the track, inspect the rest of the train, it was a 4-car Mark 1. Okay, it was offending, but the offending vehicle was vehicle 002, where the equipment was failed on. Once we'd inspected that, we made the track safe, removed all the equipment, and restored service as soon as we could. So from here on inwards, we're going to demonstrate how we lifted the train. Can you assist me? So if we come out of the way, Jennifer, slightly. So what we're going to do, we're going to lift the train wheels off the track. Okay, so you can see the guys operating what they need to do, and you will see the train leave the track. Okay, just keep away. There's no danger for anybody.
Just to let the listeners know that there are two guys are from in front of the gate, front of the train, front of the Mark 1 train, trying to prepare for the lift, and it's pretty amazing how they do this kind of thing. So let's move on to their performance and see. And of course, you can check it out on the buzzer on YouTube's website. Of course, that's the buzzer and on YouTube, and you can subscribe it from there.
And while all of this is going on with SkyTrain responding, we had bus shuttles out within half an hour. There were a dozen bus shuttles out. Another 24 were out half an hour after that, and there were up to 69 shuttles running once we got to that peak period.
So they're just preparing for the lift here.
It's a hydraulic pump. It takes some time. You can't lift the train immediately.
And the train is slowly lifting as we speak. You were saying something, Michael?
It takes a little bit of time for a jack to actually build up enough pressure to start pushing something up. So the clunking sound you're hearing is actually the jack building up the pressure.
Hydraulic rams, they do fail. So to ensure that, for safety perspective, as we get to the right height, the collar's inserted, that should anything happen, it will only fall to the collar.
They're also putting some little discs once they lift the train up. Doing.
This is being manually done. This isn't like an electric pump or something running this.
No.
He's manually clunking.
It's like you're doing the thing for your car to change your tires, right? So what they're doing is similar to the trains, only they can also lift the wheels or the rail reels, for that matter, and they can do all sorts of other stuff, similar to a car, right?
Yeah, it's very similar to changing a tire on your car.
Exactly. Of course, this was taped over on the SkyTrain maintenance yard between when you go past where
Edmund Station is. Okay, so you can see the train is actually off the track. Obviously, we lifted it a lot higher than that. I don't necessarily want to do so. If you really want me to, I can. But we lifted the train so that the wheel flange, this wheel flange here was actually clear of the track. So we lifted the train to probably 8 or 9 inches off the ground. Once it was off the ground, to get the offending device out, we moved the train in the left-hand direction from where I'm standing, off the rail. This had already had a slewing arrangement attached to it. We pulled it out, we put the train back into the centre, put the train back on the track, removed the jacking equipment, and then removed the offending item. Then we had to check the rest of the vehicles. This was a four-car train, as I mentioned earlier, to ensure that the rest of the vehicle was secure. There was one other shoe that we looked at on another vehicle that we were not happy with, so we secured that before moving the train downwards.
How unprecedented is what you had to do?
So Richard, can we just get you a little
bit? You can indeed, yeah.
So what,
yeah,
what,
yeah,
what,
yeah, sorry.
That's a good point. The timeline is important.
Yeah, let's finish the timeline and then we can go into the questions.
Yeah. So, myself and my senior manager for rail arrived on site at around 18:20 after we'd been through a number of command and control processes inside to try and ensure what was happening on site was the most effective and most efficient way of getting the vehicle back to the IMC for maintenance and restoring the service. On arriving, we've evaluated what it amounts to actually go onto the track and to be in that confined space. We have to use what we call rail sliders, and a rail slider is a complete harness and then a piece of steel that we attach to the rail that should be getting to a falling position with our full arrest in place. The equipment, as I say, was dispatched from the OMC down to us, and then as I say, it took us about an hour to set this up, and then probably 50 minutes to actually lift the train, slew the train out of the way, remove it, put the train safely back on the track, and then probably another an hour or so again to break the equipment down, clear the track, secure the train, and make our first pass movement. By then we was at around 2200 hours. We were track clear. Sorry, I'm 2130, my apologies, just to check. And then what we did as engineering was clean the area up to ensure that the rest of the trains that were stranded out on the network, because there was a train directly behind vehicle 1 and 2, to make sure that was safe. We dispatched the rest of the team down to waterfront. There was a vehicle down there to ensure that that vehicle was in a safe place to move as well. And then we handed the vehicles back, or the railway back, to operations for them to restore back into public service.
Can you explain what the failure was with that particular piece? It sounds like the train was moving normally along the track and then something happened. I don't quite understand what that was.
So the actual piece, the collector shoe, had made contact with a piece of rail that we had stored on the main line. Okay, so we're undertaking some running rail replacements. That piece of rail had come into contact with the outer edge of the shoe collector assembly. We believe anywhere between 2:30 in the afternoon and
location. Where?
Oh, sorry, location.
Between Broadway and Main.
Broadway and Main on the inbound track.
But what was it exactly that snagged that piece of equipment? Was it a rail, you said?
Yeah, we're undertaking a number of rail replacement projects, and out on Broadway S Curve, we'd stored a piece of rail that dislodged itself or bounced its way out into the guideway or into the dynamic envelope of the vehicle and managed to capture that shoe in passing.
Why did it
was caused by SkyTrain staff then?
It was caused by an incident that's unprecedented, as we've used earlier on. Okay, the piece of rail was there from the day before. Okay, over the day, what's happened, we believe vibrations due to the decking and the dunnage, which is the wooden blocks we stored it on, vibrated this piece of rail out into the driveway, into the vehicle envelope.
They should be removed outright the day before.
It is standard practice to leave rail in there, and maybe Richard can expand a little bit on that.
Yeah, so, you know, I've been in the railway industry for 20 years, okay, plus. It's standard practice to lay rail out in a guideway whilst replacing it from a time and efficiency and effective perspective. Okay, it's out worldwide. It is a common practice to store rail in a location of where you're going to re-rail.
So that piece of rail is supposed to replace the old one. It's due to replace the old one.
Correct.
Yeah.
Was it possible to tow the factor train away off the track so that train could be moving like earlier in the day?
So as you can see, that's almost 24 inches square and weighs 55 pounds. It was wedged between the train wheel and the negative rail. Where was I going to get power from? How was I going to power up a train when I've got a grounding that says I can't run electricity through it?
There are tow trucks, but are there tow trucks for sky trains that can tow a powerless train away from an active track?
At the end of the day, pushing or pulling trains is common practice worldwide. However, with an offending object that would have, you know, absolutely devastated the infrastructure, because it was laying against the power rail, I wouldn't have been running for days if I'd have attempted that. Moving the offending device was the right thing to do.
And why didn't the system's detection, detect foreign objects on the train, why didn't that detect the rail?
So, you're looking at two different systems there.
Yeah.
An intrusion device in a platform is from a human being.
Yeah.
When this become detached, the reason the train come to a safe halt was based on the principles we've lost a power integrity.
Yeah.
So the train come to a grinding halt and said, I don't know what's happening. So yeah. It came to a safe stop.
I understand, but pre-impact, the vibration was moving this rail onto the track. So why, we have these detection systems to warn if there's a foreign object on the track. And I'm wondering why that rail wasn't detected.
I'm confused. Help me understand your question.
Does anyone else want to jump in there? If there's a bird on the track, or a rock on the track, or a person on the track, or whatever, the system can see it and says, oh, stop, there's something there.
No, the system, so, no, that's a totally different entity.
Okay.
So inside the platform area,
yeah.
We have a platform intrusion device.
Okay.
On the guideway, I don't.
Okay.
Yeah, it's only in the platform where generally passengers are, should there be an incident of, you know, you dropping your purse or, you know, something of that nature. So if you climb into a platform, yes. However, on the main guideway, no.
So if you could extend that to...
Future, is there a way to prevent such kind of incident in the future? Is there a way to prevent that?
Is there a way to prevent...
In the future, same thing in the future.
At the end of the day, anything that's attached to the bottom of a vehicle or the side of the vehicle is designed to, should it become detached, generally stop the train in a safe way, okay? So a power collector that says I need a positive and negative to run loses any one of those, the train will come to a stop. Same as the signaling system. It's all designed on the safety of the system. The safety is critical.
But in the future, will you not be binding some of these rails that are sitting along the sidelines so that they don't vibrate back into place?
So immediately, as I say, standard worldwide, when you lay rail out, you lay it on dunnage. Dunnage is wooden blocks, okay? What we did this morning, we went out, we've removed the wooden blocks. These rails are now on the deck. Okay, and they're now secured with a longitudinal piece of wood, which is unprecedented where I've been before, against the running rail to secure it to the outside of the parapet wall. Okay, that'll create inefficiencies and ineffectiveness, and it will create issues when it comes around to lifting it out. The reason we put the blocks underneath is for ease of lifting the rail into situ on site.
Just to confirm, so there's no monitoring of the actual track itself between stations, is that right?
No, it's not. So the what you're asking for is a number of different devices. The Thales signaling system detects trains between stations. That's an inductive loop cable. The actual intrusion device is in a platform edge. Should, as I said, whether you drop a bag or a ball or your mobile telephone and you climb down, that detection device is only in the platforms.
So does that mean that if there's any obstacles fell on the guideway, fell on the track, won't detect it?
What if there's a tree branch on the guideway?
So we had the storm recently. What did you all do then? You all come and saw me with a big dent in the front of a train. I can't detect trees. Yeah, it's not what the system's designed for. If you was to cut the inductive loop, the train would stop. If you was to lose a power device, the train will stop. If you lose communications with the main computer, the train will stop. The system is all built on the safety of, do we know where we are? Do we know what speed we're going? Do we know which direction we're going? Do we know what our braking rate is? And are we here? And if any one of those communications break down, the train will come to a safe stop. Happy?
I need to say your reason.
Thank you. Sorry?
So there you go. That's the briefing of the SkyTrain disruption technical briefing. Of course, that happened last think it was on Wednesday. I mentioned, no, this, it was on Tuesday, but it was on Monday. Mostly it was on Monday night, Tuesday, you know, during the evening.
What he was talking about, you know, leaving rails lying near the track and stuff like that is, you know, look around at other freight lines and things like that, and it's like they do that. And you, in general, it's the rails too heavy just to bounce along the ground and fall into the way of the train itself.
Mm-hmm.
So
it makes you wonder.
So what else causes the vibration?
Rail, most likely rail.
Yeah.
That's how I see it.
Yeah,
and the bumps of the rail, and that's the reason why they're doing power rail replacement night after night after night from Sunday mm-hmm. through Thursday after 9 o'clock right through until.
Well, the system was built in, was it the late 1980s?
It was built. Okay, here's the thing. We're going to cut. Okay, you'll have that question in a moment. We'll come right back in a moment with some stuff, and we'll answer your question in a moment, Michael. We'll be back.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah, 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 blah.
Explosion.
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, Whirly Pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band, swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the top floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
Liveband.com is Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar. New shows are added daily by the city's most active promoters, musicians, and by the driving force of the music scene, the fans. Liveband.com's listings are different because they are integrated with profiles updated by bands and business owners as they promote upcoming events. Check out the archives to see how closely we've worked within the community to put on the shows you love. Visit LiveMusicVancouver.com for the latest independent and major label event listings. LiveVan.com, Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar.
And this is the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks and CITR. I'm Kelly, and this is Michael. Your question was before the break.
Oh, how long ago the actual SkyTrain system was actually built?
Well, to tell you the thing, I believe it started the beginning of 1980s when W.A.C. Bennett, but it wasn't W.A.C. Bennett. It was W.A.C. Bennett's son, Bill Bennett, became premier and wanting to, well, you know what happened with Expo 86, the World's Fair. They wanted to get more people to invite the world for Vancouver. So all they had in Greater Vancouver was buses. That's all they had.
Right.
And the sea bus. That was the only two facilities that they had. I'm trying to remember when I was... I mean, it was way back. I was just a young kid. I was only like 3 years old at the time.
Yeah.
And, so what happened was that the Premier of British Columbia, which was Bill Bennett, or known as William Bennett of the Socreds, and the Minister of Transportation was Grace McCarthy. I've met her a few times. She's a great lady. And they both started the expedition on exploring on what technologies of SkyTrain or advanced light rapid transit works in the region.
Mm-hmm.
And surely enough, the project, and of course, I'm assuming most of the Bennetts, like Bill Bennett, W.A.C. Bennett, and may probably his father before him, all lived in Ontario at the time. And there were, and what I heard from, probably from my parents, is that and of course this was owned, property owned by Jimmy Patterson. Jimmy Patterson was, of course, has two radio stations, of course. One of them was The Peak, and of course The Peak switched over Co-op Radio from 100.5 right. to 102.7, for that matter. So, I mean, Jimmy Patterson was the big boss of Expo 86, and all get together. They had some sort of a meeting, get together, and said, look, we need something for a big rapid transit system. It's pretty much similar to what happened they did with the Olympics,
with
right?
With the Canada Line, yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that's going on. All the organizations were going on. And obviously, they wanted to find a market where they want to have a cheaper way to buy these trains, 114 originally, of these Mark I trains. So that's what they did. And of course, you know, most cheap trains, for example, do wear and tear. Sadly enough.
Well, the thing of it is, because I grew up on the East Coast, and I grew up in a city that had it actually has two subway systems.
Mm-hmm.
One is actually an elevated line, and one stays completely underground.
Right.
And the thing is, by the time I was in my 20s. The system was already about mm-hmm. 30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They had to start replacing parts.
Yes.
They had to start replacing rails. They had to start replacing things on the cars.
Right.
Now they didn't actually replace the cars.
Right.
They replaced the things that attached to the power line and things like that, like mm-hmm. he was talking about the boot.
Yes.
They had to start replacing these things because they start to wear out over time.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So what it just simply seems to me is that somebody missed a preventative maintenance step.
Yes.
That probably did. It was probably scheduled in the next few weeks to be replaced or to be serviced or whatever it was anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't make it that far.
Well, yeah.
And that's something that just happens in systems.
To more of the story goes, when, of course, all the testings of the Mark I trains were in Kingston, Ontario. That's where their manufactured trains were produced. And, of course, later, that company is bought over by Bombardier, which is an international company where they make not only trains but airplanes. Mm-hmm. As well. So this is the company that does both both Canada and the United States and around the world doing massive transit for rapid transit rail systems all over the world. Then you also have, that's one part. Then you also have airplane models like Airbuses that mm-hmm. go through our country, including local services by, you know, companies like Air Canada or WestJet or any of those companies that will buy those airlines by Bombardier. So those are so that's the main company that got those ones. And so the opening ceremony was, I don't know if you've seen it today, but you go down where Main and Terminal is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's one of the original stations before Expo 86.
Which they are currently doing massive maintenance on right now because it needs upgrading.
That is correct. So you see, from where the 1 kilometer demonstration happens, it goes further towards, you see where the brick, the carpet store or whatever it is, you see where that mm-hmm. flea market is. That is the 1 kilometer demonstration. Along that route.
Okay.
So it stops where? Towards the bridges, overpass?
Oh,
the overpass?
Yeah.
It stops there. And originally, there were two sets of cars There were four sets of cars, but they were coupled. Mm-hmm. So two sets. One of them gave you a little demonstration on how the SkyTour works, and that's how everybody agreed on, okay, we'll have these kind of Mark 1 trains to provide, and that's how you built a rapid transit service from Vancouver to New Westminster. And of course, opened in 1985.
Which is now extended into Coquitlam and, of course, across into Surrey.
Yes, with the Evergreen Line, with the Millennium Line, the extension to Surrey, that kind of thing. And this was Bill Bennett's, I wouldn't say this is Bill Bennett's dream, but this was the dream of the Socrates. At the time, they were promising people to have SkyTrain facilities in your area. And there was also a possibility of a chat of at the continuing of the SkyTrain towards UBC, where we had people from UBC, like students stuff, wanting to take that, take the SkyTrain instead of having the rapid beeline, the 99 beeline route. So,
well, imagine if we did have that right now. It's like, I know my commute, it takes me right now an hour and a half to drive here.
Yeah. So and, that's,
you know, it would be pretty cool if it did exist.
Yeah. So that's the Bombardier line. That's the Expo line, the Millennium line, the Evergreen line. Canada line's different because Canada line has a different, I should say, different rail system than the ones we have with SkyTrain with Bombardier. These trains were built in South Korea.
Right.
So these were shipped from South Korea all the way to Canada when they were built, trying to make the line going to the airport and going to Richmond through the Expo.
If you look real closely, you'll see a placard somewhere on the Canada line trains that say Hyundai.
Yes, so that's from South Korea.
Yes.
So that's the difference between the two cars.
The other thing that...
And they're doing a Mark III.
Yeah. The monitoring systems and the operation systems of both lines, there's only a few companies in the world that actually build the computer systems that run these things.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Actually, Canada Line also has troubles, too. There was one winter, I think it was on YouTube, one of the customers was filming a tape over the bridge, and for some reason, sparks began to fly, and everything was...
I remember that. I wasn't actually on the train when it happened.
No, but one customer was...
I wasn't on the train. But
actually, it was in Richmond. Sorry, no, not on the bridge, but it was on Richmond.
I wasn't actually on the train, but it was a day I didn't have to actually go into work. I was working in downtown Vancouver, and I didn't actually have to go.
Okay,
but I heard it from a lot of other people that in the company, because I had appointments that were more out towards Surrey, so I didn't have to go into downtown Vancouver that particular day.
Right.
And all of my friends at that office, they were talking about all the tie-ups and everything that they experienced, and a few people that lived they actually lived in Richmond. They just decided to pack it in for the day. They didn't go in that particular day because they did shut something down because they wanted to check everything to see if there was a fire or what the heck happened.
Oh, yes. So. Electro sparks, electro problems.
Yeah.
We're going to come right back in a moment to wrap things up and hear some upcoming events on CITR. We'll be back.
Shindig, CITR's annual band competition, is in its 30th year of promoting new, local bands and providing great prizes. Shindig happens every Tuesday at Pat's Pub and Brewhouse at 403 East Hastings. So come check out the talent, let it compete to win studio time, features in Discorner magazine, buttons, merch, and more. Enjoy locally made beer, pool, and CITR DJs spinning after the bands. Shindig Night 7 is happening this Tuesday, December 1st, featuring Late Spring, Cloudhood, and Regen. Covers $6 at the door, and the show is 19+. Check out CITR on Facebook or on Twitter at CITR Shindig for all the details.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
My name's Chris Horrific.
You always wanted his character to be bigger than life.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is, without question, the greatest sports and entertainment event of all time. Be a part of it, Monday.
From 1 to 3 p.m.
The Parts Unknown Show on 101.9 CITR. Sometimes cosmoses collide.
Break your fingers!
You tune into Community Living Show on CITR 101.9 FM and streaming online at CITR.ca, and of course our flagship, that is our flagship, and of course the National Campus and Radio and Community Radio Association, part of the NCRA network. I'm of course Kelly, and of course Michael's here as well.
Yeah.
And I know Christmas is coming, and the fact that we do have a thing called the Christmas parade that we do in the city.
The Rogers Parade, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Isn't that this weekend?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know why they're doing it so early this year. That's the question.
Maybe it's next weekend.
I
know it's coming soon.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering, couldn't they just do it on the weekend before Christmas, you know, like on the 18th or the 20th or something, for that matter? It'd be more easier to do that. And then, well, I know it's by Rogers, right?
Yeah, it is by Rogers.
So I'm just wondering if City TV, right, that's the affiliated partnered with Rogers. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if City TV would broadcast it live on December 20th. And have it, you know, have it live on December 20th, and then have it on Christmas Day on
December 20th. Do the rebroadcast, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm just,
cool.
You know.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, because every city.
On city TV.
every city I've ever lived in that's had, like, a Christmas parade, you know, they have like their own special time that they want to do it. Mm-hmm. The same thing with some of the New Year's parades that also, you know, it's, I guess everybody that has a New Year's parade, they actually do it on New Year's, but mm-hmm. But you know, I don't know. It's whoever can plan it and make it happen.
Mm-hmm, so, of course.
Because it takes a lot of planning to actually make a parade happen.
Yes, and I'm
just, and there's permits and everything else that have to be signed and mm-hmm. everything. The RCMP has to be involved for redirection of traffic and stuff like that, right?
You mean the Vancouver Police?
Depends on where it is.
Oh, true. But I mean, if it's in the city of Vancouver,
yeah,
it's
like for instance, the walk from Langley to Banff. The yeah. whole route for it's the officially where it
was
would be
the
walking.
RCMP.
Walking for 36 days, the RCMP has yeah. to redirect traffic along the highways from Langley to Banff.
Right. Yeah, then that's an
yeah,
RCMP
it's,
situation.
It's RCMP,
yeah.
you know. You know, or have whoever the local authority is.
Yes, of course.
So, and there's each municipality has a permit fee that you have to pay for a parade, because this is actually that's actually considered to be a parade as it goes through a town. So
of course,
and everybody wants their fee. They have their handouts for a little bit of cash and everything. So. And I don't even know what the fees are for Vancouver for them to shut down traffic and direct it. Mm-hmm. So I know that in Richmond we ran into quite a hefty fee when we were just trying to have a picnic in a park. It was a public park, so. We just wanted a dedicated area in a park for a picnic that we were going to have a couple of charities at and everything, like the Children's Wish Foundation and one of the other groups that was talking about anti-bullying was the World Taekwondo Association and everything. And the fee that they hit us with, we were like, "You got to be kidding me!" It's like, it was very hefty.
Was it funding?
Hmm?
Was it all the funding that was you were saying? You got to be kidding me.
Well, we wanted it to be a charitable event, and we didn't want to charge a fee for people to enter the event.
Okay.
We wanted it to be a free event, and. They it's kind of difficult just for a rent. We'll say a rental fee or a permit fee for a park. It's kind of difficult to come up with more than $500. When you're talking about groups that collect funds to give away to other purposes.
Okay,
you know, it's like now you had to redirect that. Mm-hmm. You know, so. It just didn't happen. We wound up having to shut the event down because that was just fee to get the park.
Okay.
And there was other fees for public use of the washrooms.
Okay.
It's like. So. You know, to have it was just crazy. The amount of fees, it just kept piling up.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a few thousand dollars in fees.
Ooh, whoa.
To make something happen. Mm. And I can imagine for a parade, you know, how much they actually had to pay in fees to shut down so many streets,
mm-hmm.
have traffic redirected, because you have to pay for all that. You have to pay for the police to show up. You have to pay for the barricades to appear. All these things,
mm-hmm.
The pride parade, they probably pay thousands of dollars to have this happen. That's why they have TELUS as a sponsor.
Yes, and then just worrying about the playoffs, like if the Canucks were going to a Stanley Cup playoffs, and they had to hire lots of police for that matter.
Well. When they had the
riot,
the riot, yeah. Which just so we were all clear on this, the riot and the hockey game really had nothing to do with each other. It's
no,
just somebody planned it.
Planned stupidity.
But with the police did actually shut down part of. They barricaded off because it was the Stanley Cup.
Yes,
they actually did barricade off part of downtown, and
true.
The Canucks organization or the NHL had to come up with the funding for things to happen.
Of course.
And
a lot of money needed to be funded for security.
The reason
and the
why
police.
They actually the NHL decided to actually have that there was going to be a security risk is because the year before somebody had planned to try to have the riot happen for the gold medal round for hockey at the Olympics.
Yeah. Did that really happen? No.
No, they managed to circumvent them then, but they never figured out who the whole core group was, but as far as I know, but they did get word. Who, I guess, why would you post on Facebook that you're going to do a criminal act, though?
Oh.
Kind of crazy to me. Mm. So they actually use Facebook to get people involved.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what their end game was, you know. But it's just kind of crazy stuff that it kind of makes sense because the police that show up and everything, they're being redirected from something else. So you have to pay for them.
Mm-hmm.
It does make sense. They're probably either on overtime or something like that.
Right.
We can't expect the municipality itself to, like the city of Vancouver, you can't expect them to shell out salaries when they don't have any money to pay the salary. So
okay,
it kind of makes sense in the end, right?
Exactly.
It's not exactly wasted money. It's just, this is the reason you need the security.
Yeah, of course.
Especially these day and ages where, when you look at things like Boston, the Boston Marathon, you know,
yep.
Bombing.
I mean, it was unexpected.
Right. It was totally unexpected.
And for some reasons, these were runners, and this was a marathon where a lot of families and
historic
people are getting together to see great runners doing the marathon race. And they didn't expect this kind of situation where a planned, I wouldn't say terrorist, but some sort of evil person plans a bomb on their route parade,
right.
For that matter.
So it's kind of expected you're going to have to pay for security.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you want people to come and be safe, right? You want everybody to have a good time. So you got to pay for security these days.
Yeah. So. I've still got some bad feelings about security and the money situation, where some monies can be not always safe.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
So I have a situation on that, but I won't talk about that right now. Anyways, for tomorrow's program, do you have something on the half-hour show?
I was hoping you had something. Maybe we could continue this conversation about security.
Right. I mean, you know, I could do...
it does become a disability issue. Because,
right.
You know, a riot happens.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to the guy that's... We won't mention the guy in the wheelchair, but what if the guy that's walking with a cane? You know?
Yes.
Because one of our friends, Daniel Wu, he cannot get around with, he needs a cane to walk around.
Okay.
You know? So.
Hey, maybe we can talk about that tomorrow.
Yeah, so security.
Part two, we should say.
Yes, part two, keeping events safe so everybody can have a good time, including those with disabilities, no matter how small they are.
Yeah, so tune in to Co-op Radio 100.5 FM if you're in the Vancouver area, or you can listen to this
station. If you're
online. If you're online on the NCRA radio networks, for that matter. So,
yeah.
All right, thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Kelly.
We'll talk again tomorrow.
Yeah.
And, of course, we will be back again next week, same time, same station, on CITR, our show.
Yeah.
Have a great day, everybody.
Sagarima pani basa, sagarima.